As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. It's another State of the Program edition, and it was a very newsy past month or so, and so we missed some of our big State of the Programs when they came out. So I wanted to make sure we came back around on some of these before Media Day started, because there's some really interesting teams out there and stories going into the season, and I think there are going to be some teams that look very different this year. And I was talking to Phil Steele, yes, Phil Steele of the magazine, the other day. And he said his bounce back team of the year is the Penn State Nittany Lions. And so I'm bringing on Audrey Snyder, our incredible Penn State beat writer. And we're talking about a team that had about as miserable a year as you could during the pandemic year. And they are back and they're expected to be the second best team in the Big Ten behind Ohio State. You know, I'm sure Wisconsin feels the same way, but at Penn State, the standard is pretty high. They didn't meet it last year. And Audrey, you and I were talking before we started recording about how weird last year was. And in your State of the Program story, you talked to Brent Pry, the defensive coordinator. He said basically it's like the Twilight Zone walking into the stadium, but it feels like it was more than just the game day experience. Like, what? How strange was last season for Penn State?
I feel like to say it was bizarre might be an understatement. Even today, like I was scrolling through, I was on my phone looking at something and I came across a photo last year of the stadium, and it's like, there's a game going on and there's no one in the stands except for like a smattering of parents. The whole thing, I mean, even now, the farther removed we get from it, it just felt surreal. And I live in State College about 10 minutes away from the stadium. And so like, you're used to, you know, the town coming alive, the grocery stores packed, all the fans, the tailgating, all that. And like, it just never happened. And even for the students, you know, they were enrolled and in-person classes were offered, but a lot of their learning was done online. Like a lot of kids had maybe one class in person. Maybe some kids only had like two classes in person the whole year. So it was like really just this weird isolated thing. And I felt like, you know, going through it, you hear stories throughout the season and you're like, yeah, this is really bad. We're all living it. But I actually felt like this spring we got a better perspective on it, because Sean Clifford had made the point where Parker Washington, you know, has this breakout freshman year last year. And Sean was like, yeah, I didn't really start throwing with Parker consistently like until a couple weeks before the first game, because they were in different training groups because of COVID.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was just stuff like that, that you get a better appreciation for it now, kind of with the benefit of hindsight.
Well, and you think about, so the way 2020 was set up, essentially, they change offensive coordinators because Ricky Ronnie gets the Old Dominion head coaching job. And then they hire Kirk Ciarrocco away from Minnesota. Minnesota's offense in 2019 was tremendous. I mean, Tanner Morgan was averaging over 10 yards per attempt. They were awesome. And so the thought is, okay, well, this guy's going to come in and really liven things up on offense. And but then you get the pandemic happens. You know, Micah Parsons.
No spring ball.
No spring ball. You've got very limited summer workouts. Micah Parsons, their best player, opts out. Now, he's a defensive player, but still, your best player is gone. They do decide to play a season. You get close to season. Right before you find out Journey Brown has to medically retire, the first quarter of the first game, yeah. Noah Cain gets hurt, and he's out for the season. I mean, it was one thing after another.
It was. And then, you know, you go on a couple more weeks, and then Pat Freiermuth ends up with a labrum injury, so then he's done for the year. And it was like the walking wounded meets this, like, apocalyptic town. And, oh yeah, James Franklin's family is living away from him the whole season, and, you know, that really wore on him as the season went, especially. I mean, it was... Any way you looked at last year, you know, and I know everybody says you don't want to use COVID as an excuse and whatnot, but it greatly impacted the product on the field. And I don't know, Andy, I think you can make the argument that if the Michael Penix call goes the other way in Indiana, that maybe then Penn State, you know, you see 0-5, the worst start in program history. If they win that game, then you play Ohio State, still lose that, then you're 1-1 instead of 0-2. Like, I do think there's a little bit kind of how that played into it. I mean, because this team got steamrolled by Maryland last year. I mean, it was just a mess.
Yeah, it's wild. And then you look, and it feels like the light. Now, Michigan wasn't good. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the medicine they needed kind of game. And then they play Rutgers and Michigan State and Illinois. But it did feel like they became more competent as the season went on. They're less disjointed and... you saw that with a few teams last year. I think LSU was another example of that, of a talented team that just got better as the season went on, even as they lost people, mm-hmm. when you kind of figured out, okay, this is who we got, and this is the best we can do.
Deal with it, yeah.
So, and maybe Penn State was in that boat too, but yes, James Franklin, you know, the situation with his family, it was a health issue that mm-hmm. they wanted to make sure that, you know, he was there and his wife and kids were elsewhere, so they were not exposed to a bunch of different people all the time.
Yeah.
And yeah, that has to wear on you. I mean, if you're used to having a family, if you're a single person, no, that's normal. But if you're used to having your family around, like, I can't imagine if my family moved 7 states away for the next 6 months. I would be miserable.
I don't know, Andy. Should we ask them, though, their thoughts on that? They might think it's like the best 7 months of their life.
They're kind of used to it. Back in my old job, I was on the road like 150 days a year. So, I mean, they every once in a while threw a party when I went on a road trip. So we'll see. When I hit the road in earnest this fall, we'll see how big the parties are when I leave.
I was going to say, I mean, that whole thing, like, I was covering games from my couch in State College, and, like, it was just, the whole thing was bizarre. And, I mean, even to this point, Andy, Big Ten Media Days, July, like, 23rd, I believe it is, the Penn State talks, that'll be the first time we've spoken to James Franklin in person, face-to-face, since February of 2020. I mean, it was just bizarre. I mean, everything's behind a computer screen, and you're trying to follow up your questions, and you're muting or you're unmuting yourself, and it was a mess. But I hope that's all behind us now. We made it through, and Penn State, Beaver Stadium, they are expected to be back at full capacity this year, which people were waiting on pins and needles for that announcement all summer. So that is out there. So yeah, a huge step toward whatever this return to normalcy is going to be.
Yeah, and a little bit different look. The Kirk Ciarrocca experiment only lasted the COVID year. Mm-hmm. He's gone now. Mike Yurcich, the new offensive coordinator. Mike Yurcich was very accomplished at Oklahoma State. He then worked at Ohio State. He was on the Tom Herman staff at Texas last year that got fired. He brings in a different look, but you know, the idea is up-tempo, spread it out. Yeah, this is what they have the personnel to run, it would mm-hmm. seem. It seemed to be very good for them, especially, you know, you look at what Oklahoma State would do. They always like to run the ball. You know, Ohio State liked to run the ball. So Penn State, with its backs and still a pretty good line, should be able to move the ball on the ground. And I would think that makes life a little easier for Sean Clifford.
Yeah, that's the big question mark. What are you going to get from Sean Clifford? I mean, especially early on last year, he played as bad as we've ever seen him play. I'm pretty sure he would say it was the worst, you know, football of his life. And that's the thing. I mean, how much of last year can you pin on the offense? And okay, you're trying to install this Kirk Shiraka offense during this disjointed offseason. I'm sure there was part of that. But then there were also, I mean, the performance issues. It just wasn't there. I mean, he was turning the ball over like crazy. And it just did not look like the same guy that we saw the year before, which admittedly feels like 5 years ago, who helped, you know, get them to that Cotton Bowl. And that was kind of the moment where you said, oh, man, Journey Brown is this breakout game. Micah Parsons looks unstoppable. And then now that feels like an eternity ago. But, yeah, I mean, Sean Clifford's rebound is going to be fascinating. And I spoke with Mike Yersich for our State of the Program series, and, you know, all spring, Mike did not want to talk about any players by name because he wanted to actually see them in person first and get to work with them through spring ball. But as they came out of that, I asked him point blank, I said, how confident are you in Sean Clifford running your offense? And he said that, you know, Sean intellectually, I mean, he's picked up everything and he's picked it up really fast and he's really pleased, but he just said, you know, it kind of comes back to the mechanics and making sure that everything is kind of fine-tuned because, yeah, they're not really easing into this season at all, Andy, with week one at Camp Randall, full capacity expected.
Yeah, and they get Auburn as a non-conference opponent coming to state college. I mean, and we don't know what Auburn's
in between. Yeah, Ball State week two. Yeah, good luck.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting because, like, we don't know what Auburn's going to be, but we do know they're talented because Brian Harsin is their new coach, and they've not shown anything. So there's no question other than we know that Bo Nix is advertising a brand of sweet tea that is available in convenience stores across Alabama. So
yeah,
that's what we got. We'll be right back after these words.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Speaking of quarterbacks in the SEC, Will Levis, likely the starting quarterback at Kentucky, he came in for Sean Clifford several times last year. There's now very little experience behind Clifford if that part of it doesn't work. So it's got to be a young guy if something bad happens.
Yeah, I mean, right now you're banking on Taquan Roberson or Christian Veiu, and Veiu just got here in January, so I really don't think right now that's a viable option. I mean, they're going to say it's a camp competition, and you'd expect that Roberson would kind of have the upper hand there. But all off season, I mean, going back to, gosh, probably December even, maybe even before the end of last year, James Franklin kept talking about wanting to add a quarterback through the transfer portal, that they wanted to get somebody, they needed to get somebody for depth. Well, instead, you lost Will Levis, you know, and then you lost Micah Bowens to Oklahoma, which was really a fascinating one to me because he was, you know, the number three quarterback here, but sees an opportunity at Oklahoma. Hey, go for it. But yeah, so you lost two scholarship quarterbacks. You bring in a true freshman in Veiu, but you haven't been able to add throughout this crazy offseason. I mean, they've added plenty of other guys through the portal, but they haven't been able to get an arm. So going into camp, Andy, with three scholarship quarterbacks, and oh yeah, by the way, Roberson didn't even get game reps last year, so you've really got Clifford and that's it. And I think where this could be a factor is we saw it 2 years ago. By the end of the season, Sean Clifford likes to run. They like when he runs, but you don't like the hits that come with that and the wear and tear. And he was really wore down toward the end of that Cotton Bowl season. And then Levis made a spot start against Rutgers that year. And Sean then was a full go for the Cotton Bowl game, had that month of bowl prep the rest up. But yeah, to me, that is a major concern because not only how does this offense perform, how does your quarterback bounce back, but also, oh yeah, what do you have behind your quarterback? Because that's an area that they have not been able to fill.
Yeah, and that's a problem pretty much everywhere where you don't know with these quarterbacks that move around, transfer to all these different places, you get left with no experience whatsoever.
Yep.
And it's not unique to Penn State. I mean, right. Ohio State doesn't have a quarterback who has thrown a pass in a game yet. Mm-hmm. Now they've got guys that were highly recruited that they recruited, but they don't know what they've got yet because they haven't seen him throw a pass in a game yet. So everybody's kind of in this boat. Penn State has experience there. It's just, you're right. I would get nervous, especially given what they have to play at the beginning of the season, every time Sean Clifford tucks it and runs.
I mean, I know they also, I mean, they think they have a lot or they have enough in their room, at least for the time being. But one of the things I thought could have been interesting this summer, they had a quarterback from Iowa Western Community College. He was on campus for a workout. They didn't offer, but he was a qualifier coming out. So he could have, you know, given you another arm for camp. So maybe that's somebody they kind of track throughout this next year. But yeah, I mean, everybody wants a quarterback, and I know the fan base has been clamoring for another one, not just one for depth, but one to compete with Clifford. And it's like, hey, you know, starting quarterbacks aren't just hanging around out there. Occasionally they are, but, you know, it's hard to try and just pluck somebody out of there and then bring them in and run your system.
Well, and think about how many Power Five teams got the guy they think is going to start out of the portal this year. Kentucky did. Mm-hmm. That's one guy, but and Notre Dame got Jack Cohn from Wisconsin, which was you know, best for both parties situation because of Graham Mertz. But it's not a huge thing. Maybe Tyler Shook starts at Texas Tech after leaving Oregon, but it's not. There just weren't a ton of guys on the market who would be willing to come in and be a backup. You know, they want to come in and compete for a starting job. Sean Clifford's the starter, so that put them in the position where they were not going to have their pick of QBs out of the transfer portal.
Yeah, and I think the Levis thing is fascinating too because everybody wants to watch and see how that goes. I mean, his usage here last year was just so bizarre. I mean, he did – they benched Sean Clifford midway through the year. Levis got the start. He then struggled, so they pulled him and put Clifford back in during the game, and then Clifford kept the job from there on out. But the way that they were using Levis, it was, I kept calling it like the battering ram package because it'd be third down, they'd put him in, he'd run the ball. I mean, it was effective. But, you know, this is a guy that we kept hearing about, his big arm and all this stuff. And there was like this crazy streak throughout the season. I forget what I actually stopped tracking it at, but I think it hit like 30 or 32, where he'd play 32 snaps, come into the game, and had an attempt at a pass. And it was like, okay, so is this your quarterback, or what are you doing with him?
And it's interesting because that he'd fit right into last year's Kentucky offense. That's not really what Kentucky's going to do this year. Yeah, he'd be perfect for last year's Kentucky offense too. But between Dotson and Washington, with some targets there, and it feels like a pretty deep backfield, Clifford should have some help this year, at least it seems.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Jahan Dotson is going to push Chris Olave as the best receiver in the Big Ten. I mean, I really think because last year went so poorly for Penn State, I do think some of that overshadowed how good Dotson was. I mean, Parker Washington also coming on last year as a true freshman, making that jump to a position where they desperately needed someone to step up. That was really impressive too. So yeah, you've got two really talented receivers, and you'd have to figure that Keandre Lambert-Smith would also factor in there. I mean, he was a true freshman last year, got on the field. But you have those guys, and I think, Andy, one of the silver linings to as bad as last year got, the one area where it does help them now, at least moving forward, Pat Freiermuth gets hurt. So you saw a lot of tight ends, Brenton Strange and Theo Johnson, and these are guys that looked pretty good last year when they did get in. I mean, we saw a lot of two tight end packages and stuff like that. Theo Johnson, when they signed him, was one of the headliners in their class a couple cycles ago. So they've got playmakers there, but it's just you'd like to see a little more depth in the receiving core. Now, the running back spot, you know, you get Noah Kane back healthy. At least looks like that's what they're trending toward. I mean, he did some work in the spring, and we've seen training videos of him this summer and stuff. Looks fine. In fact, his upper body, Andy, one of the training videos that was out there, it looked to me like he was kind of built like the Incredible Hulk. Like his arms were massive and his chest. So you've got Noah Kane, you've got Devin Ford, and then, you know, you have Kevon Lee, who gets thrust off up the depth chart last year. I mean, Kevon Lee and Keziah Holmes were guys that they didn't expect to play last year. And then you get to the point where they're starting. You know, I believe it was against Michigan where Kevon Lee has this big game. And you're like, where the heck did this come from? You know, it was crazy.
And it's basically somebody had to play it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they needed somebody. And it's like, here, Kevon, like, best of luck. And I remember I did a story on it a week or so after that game. And I talked with his mom and she was like, yeah, like, I'm back at home in Florida watching the game. And I'm like, oh, my God, my son's starting, you know. But like, that's just how quickly the depth in that room dwindled last year. But now, you know, you're on the other side of that. And I think if you're Penn State, you're banking on the experience that these younger players gained last year.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of this. I almost wonder if we've forgotten, and I don't know how if it's going to be the same with opponents, because you know, they're going to play Wisconsin. Everybody's going to get a good look at them. They're not going to be able to hide anything. They'll have to be exactly what they are against Wisconsin. But have they forgotten? Do they not know what this is supposed to look like? Because it's really been a while since we've seen probably what James Franklin intended his team to look like.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to go back to the Cotton Bowl, because I think last year, I mean, all of we kept hearing with the Shiraka offense that, you know, it was going to do this, it was going to do that, and it did none of that. And I kept wondering throughout the year, well, how much of this is actually Shiraka's offense? You know, like, where are we at with this?
And maybe it's not. They had no time to put it in, no way to put it in.
I mean, I just think, like, the time element, and I know Penn State brought this up too, but had they known when the Big Ten canceled the season there in August, like, had they known that they were actually going to play, they would have kept the kids on campus. Instead, they sent the players home and said, like, hey, we've got like a week and a half, 2 weeks before the semester. Go home, spend time with your families. Like, we'll deal with whatever when we come back. But yeah, so like, they lost all of that time too. So yeah, I mean, I just think you say, okay, now it looks like you're in a much better place, right? Like, you had spring ball, you had Yursich. I know the one thing that the players have raved about with Mike Yursich is his energy, that he came in, and it was almost kind of like this cultural shift. I mean, we had very limited interactions with Kirk Shiraka. I think we only talked to him once in person, and then everything else was on Zoom. You know, he was very fiery by players' accounts, but Yursich, like, apparently there's just no off switch with the guy, that it's just constant juice. And like, even talking to prospects on official visits and stuff throughout the month of June, that was the one thing they kept saying as well. So, I mean, this is the other part of this. Mike Yursich was the guy who James Franklin wanted when they hired Kirk Shiraka instead. I mean, and that's, you know, an interesting thing to look at too. And you can say, okay, why didn't that happen? You know, did Ohio
Texas
State
offered him a lot of money? Yeah.
Yes. I mean, was Texas a factor? Was it Ohio State being a factor in it? I mean, you know, you have all these options, but this time around, I believe, Andy, and I could be completely wrong, but I believe if Yursich was not available this offseason, I think they would have rolled with Kirk Shiraka again and actually put this offense in and see how it goes, just because I think last year was such a mess. But hey, the guy that you really, really wanted came available. You got him this time around. I think that has to have people energized.
I would think so. Let's talk a little bit about the defense, because everybody saw Jason Owe in the draft, and he was a massive prospect. But there was the, oh, he didn't have any sacks and all of it. And Shaka Toney gone as well. But I mean, like, if you watch the Indiana game, they were in Michael Penix's lap every play. It wasn't like they had a bad pass rush. But those guys are gone. It seems, though, like they have quite a bit of depth behind them.
Yeah, so they went out into the transfer portal, and while they didn't get that quarterback, they got Arnold Ebikade, a defensive end from Temple, who has a chance to start. I mean, he's definitely going to play a factor this year. I mean, I think you're probably looking at right now, I would say that your starting defensive ends are probably going to be Adisa Isaac and Nick Tarberton, but Arnold Ebikade will push for playing time for sure, will push for a starting job. And that's big, because this is a room that lost so much experience. I mean, Shaka Toney was that guy in the meeting room who could tell the younger players, like, hey, this is how it works, here's how it goes, because he had been here for so long. But you lost that game experience, but you also kind of lost that veteran presence. So you go out, you add Ebikade, who's going to certainly be able to help you. But I think Adisa Isaac is somebody who could have a chance to maybe surprise people more so on like a national perspective if things kind of go according to plan. I mean, he was a big time prospect. He's looked the part. I mean, I remember when Etor Gross-Matos was here talking with Etor about him at that point, and everybody just kept saying, like, yeah, Adisa Isaac, like, this guy's going to be the next big thing to come off of this defensive line. So I guess now we're going to have to see, Andy, whether or not they were right.
We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors. Yeah, and that's the thing. If they can get a good pass rush, I feel like this is a team. I don't want to say what they can do against Ohio State because it's so hard when you look at the talent gap between Ohio State and the rest of the Big Ten. But the thing is, we don't know what Ohio State's going to look like offensively. We know that Ryan Day runs a really good offense, but we've not seen any of their quarterbacks play yet. But I do feel like if Penn State can kind of outperform its talent level and there's a slight dip with Ohio State, then Penn State does have a chance.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, Andy, that to me is always the thing, right? Like when I always look at, okay, Penn State, you know, their path to the playoff, right? In the last few years, you say, okay, well, you got to get past Ohio State. And my point throughout all that kept being, I think your best shot is to hope that Ohio State, you catch them in one of these transition years, one of these kind of turnover years. And if you're Penn State, if you're clicking at the right time, then that might be your path in, right? Like that might be your once every 4 or 5 years if you're rolling that you have that shot to do that. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Penn State has matched up very well with Ohio State, which is one of those things that I remember James Franklin saying a couple years ago. You know, some teams, almost for inexplicable reasons, they just match up really well against one another. And that's kind of what these two teams have been. And so, yeah, I mean, maybe you get a shot this year against the Buckeyes, but of course it is out in Columbus this year. That's another thing that Penn State lost last year, because you say this was supposed to be your stacked roster going against Ohio
State. Yeah, that's your whiteout
game. Yep,
yeah.
In Beaver Stadium, and you had none of that.
So who's the whiteout this year? Is it Michigan?
They have not announced it yet. However,
Indiana? Could Indiana be the whiteout opponent?
No, I don't think so. Based off of my conversations with multiple recruits, they've said that they've been told, again, this is what they're saying, that it's going to be against Auburn. Which
That's a good spot for that. Yeah,
I think that, and we do know that the Auburn game's a 7:30 kick. So while Penn State has not confirmed the whiteout yet, I think that would make a lot of sense, right? Showcase it to an SEC crowd. Now, I do wonder, Andy, and maybe because of everything last year that they lost, would they try two whiteouts this year? I don't know.
Ooh, right? Why not? Go crazy. I feel like everybody should do whatever the heck they want this year, because
endorse sweet tea, have two whiteouts, do whatever you want.
Exactly. Go crazy. We sat around on our couches for an entire year. Like, if somebody wants to go all white, all white everything one more time, why not? You know, do it against Auburn, which I think you make a great point. You show that off to a different audience, and that game is probably going to deliver a big number because those are two great brands, good intersectional game. So absolutely do that. But then, pick a Big Ten game, whether that's Indiana or Michigan, especially if it's going to be a night game. And sure, why not? Have fun with it. This is supposed to be fun.
You know, and they've been asked before about the possibility of doing two whiteouts, and they always went back to, well, you know, we don't want it to lose kind of its allure, its luster if we do it more than once. So we've seen them do like the stripe out before, but which is pretty cool. But it's not the same. I mean, the atmosphere for those whiteout games. Have you ever been to one, Andy? Have you ever?
I was at the Michigan game in 17. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's just different. Like the place just goes absolutely crazy. And from a kind of coming out of COVID perspective, home football games do wonders for this local economy here, Andy, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Why not have two whiteouts? And I mean, give these businesses another chance to try and make up for all that was lost last year. I think that's why I
live
in a
very similar town. So it's the same thing where everybody's just hoping that it's going to be a nice normal football season, and the home games are going to be fun, and people are going to want to go and want to spend the same kind of money they used to spend. Yeah. So yeah, why not? Why not juice it up a little bit? Because you did lose an entire year of, and especially in the Big Ten, you lost an entire year of this. Like, I live in an SEC town where they at least could have some fans in the stands, though. Yeah. Nobody was really traveling to those games. It was basically people who lived in town would go to the games.
Yeah.
But when you have a situation where you're expecting, I mean, those 7 Saturdays a year make or break a lot of the businesses in town, by all means, do whatever you can to help them out. And because I realize the whiteout is special. It's a special concept and it's supposed to be one special game a year, but the rules are different now. You know, go back to the normal rules in 2022.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I mean, I think just it was so crazy. And one of the scenes that I will always remember of last year will have absolutely nothing to do with the football that was on the field, but just the fact that the day that Penn State was supposed to open the season, that it was canceled, I just drove over to the stadium because I'm like, I don't know. I've lived here for like 10 years. Like, I think I kind of know this fan base well enough to know that people are probably going to show up and try to tailgate and like try to do something. And a handful of people did. And to me, that was just like really kind of crazy. Like, they went and picked up food at all the places that they normally have for their tailgates and went and sat outside this empty stadium in central Pennsylvania because this is what they're used to doing. So for all these people, which I think also is another reason why you get that Auburn whiteout in there if you can early, get it in there in September. People have waited more than long enough to get back in the stadium, but also back to a whiteout. But yeah, I mean, the scenes like that last year, I mean, it was just absolutely surreal. And you're like, hey, yeah, you should be playing a football game right now, but instead we're sitting in an empty parking lot. Like, it was bizarre.
Well, and that's what makes me so excited. Like, you and I are talking about football. We're talking about games. Penn State is playing Wisconsin not very long from now.
September 4th. Like, yeah.
I mean, Penn State is, by the time this podcast runs, we're less than a month away, less than 2 months away. Yeah. From Penn State at Wisconsin, national television, Big Noon Saturday, Fox pregame show leading into. I mean, how awesome is that? There's going to be people in the stands. They're going to jump around. It's going to be amazing.
I mean, and that's also, I think, part of the unique factor, too, with that game is Penn State has not been out there. Gosh, I want to say it was like since 2012. This is a place that, you know, even fans from here, I think, if they have the opportunity to travel to a game this year, I think this is one that they would say, hey, you know what, go out for that one because they haven't been there. The other game, I think, Andy, that is always a fun one that I now, as a road trip, really look forward to, the games at Iowa. So October, I believe it's like 8th, 9th, whatever that Saturday is. I think it's the 9th. They're out at Kinnick Stadium. And I don't know, I feel like every Penn State Iowa game has become a night game these days. And if I'm not driving right from Kinnick Stadium to the Cedar Rapids Airport, feeling like my eyes are going to fall out of my head, the game didn't really happen. So that's kind of been one of those things too that I think people will look forward to and certainly try to travel to.
There's no let up in the schedule, by the way, and until you get to the very end, really. And that's the hardest part.
It's rough, yeah.
And if Michigan State happens to be better, then there really is no let up. It's tough. I mean, we talked about at the beginning of it where you go at Auburn, at Wisconsin, Ball State, and then Auburn. They get Villanova, but then it's Indiana and Iowa in consecutive weeks. And I mean, knowing what we know about Indiana the last few years, that's a tough stretch. And then obviously there's Ohio State. We'll see what Michigan is. We don't know. But really, they got to hope that Michigan is what they were again last year, so that end of the season at least stretch is a little bit of a reprieve, because the first two thirds are brutal.
Yeah, I mean, it's a rough schedule, and I think that's where it's kind of almost difficult to gauge this team in some regards, because you could look at it and say they might go 8-4. You know, and they could look a heck of a lot better offensively. But you would say, okay, what does that mean for a team that, you know, James Franklin, in a lot of ways, has kind of spoiled people because they've gotten so good so quickly. But then you kind of say, well, okay, what happens if they're like an 8-win team, right? Or if they're a 9-win team? Like, yeah. What does that mean in the grand context of this? But then you could say, well, hey, they were 0-5 at one point last year and looked awful. Yeah. So it's, to me, it's just tough to gauge. But yeah, I mean, the fact that you brought it up earlier, which I think was a really good point, you can't stash away, hide away what you want to do early on this season. I mean, you're coming out at Camp Randall with everything that you have, and that's who you're going to be.
And we're going to find out in less than 2 months. There's going to be college football on our TVs and in stadiums that we can go to.
Man, smell those tailgate lots already, Andy.
I have so many places you need to hit in Madison, but you know, just make sure you drink some Spotted Cow. That's all that really matters.
I'm actually heading out there on a Thursday instead of a Friday, so I'll have plenty of time for all of your recommendations.
Oh, it's gonna be so much fun. Audrey, thank you so much.
You can't wait.
We're media day's right around the corner, so this is great. I am so excited. Football is on its way. We'll talk to you on Monday.